Welcome to The Progressive Corporation's Investor Relations Conference Call. This conference call is also available via an audio webcast. Webcast participants will be able to listen only throughout the duration of the call. In addition, this conference is being recorded at the request of Progressive. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. The company will not make detailed comments in addition to those provided in its quarterly report on the Form 10-Q and letters to shareholders, which have been posted to the company's website, and will use this conference call to respond to questions. Acting as moderator for the call will be Matt Downing. At this time, I will turn the call over to Mr. Downing. You may begin.
Thank you, Candy, and good morning. Welcome to Progressive's conference call. Participating on today's call are Glenn Renwick, our CEO, and Brian Domeck, our CFO. Also on the line is Bill Cody, our Chief Investment Officer. The call is scheduled to last about an hour. As always, our discussions on this call may include forward-looking statements. These forward-looking statements are based on management's current expectations and are subject to many risks and uncertainties that could cause actual events and results to differ materially from those discussed during this call. Additional information concerning those risks and uncertainties is available in our 2012 annual report on Form 10-K and our quarterly reports on Form 10-Q issued during 2013, where you will find discussions of the risk factors affecting our businesses, safe harbor statements relating to forward-looking statements, and other discussions of the risks, uncertainties, and other challenges we face. Each of these documents can be found via the investors page of our website, progressive.com. Candy, we're now ready to take our first question.
Thank you. At this time, we are ready to begin the formal question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, you may press star one on your touch-tone phone. You may press star two to withdraw your question. After pressing star one to ask a question, you'll be prompted to state your name and company to help with pronunciation. Please be advised that during this process, you'll be momentarily blocked from hearing the live call. To allow the company to respond to as many callers as possible, you will be limited to one initial question and one follow-up question per request. If your telephone has a mute capability, we ask that you use this function during the time your question is being answered to minimize any background noise. To the extent of you have additional questions, you will need to place your name back into the queue by selecting star one on your telephone. One moment for your first question. Our first question is from Vinay Misquith, Evercore. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. The first question is on capital management. We've seen a lower level of share repurchases in the last few months. Curious as to what your views are on a special dividend going forward in light of your excess capital at the subsidiaries.
Sure. I'll let Brian sort of take that, but recognize that if we had any significant statement to make, we would have made it in our release. These are things that we study. I certainly understand the question. I don't think there's any issues there. To the extent that we have anything to release, we'll discuss that with our board in December, but there's really no specific. Brian can maybe comment a little bit on share repurchase and any other things relative to the dividend, but we have no statement today.
Sure. I continue to characterize our capital position as strong. We ended the end of the third quarter with $8.8 billion of capital. That's including both debt and equity. Ended October with closer to $8.9 billion of capital, and that includes the retirement of $150 million of debt during the month. So even in a month where we retired $150 million of debt, we had over $200 million of comprehensive income. So a strong month in October. Certainly for the year, our capital creation has been strong with comprehensive income over $1 billion so far. I would characterize third quarter capital management activity as pretty modest. We did repurchase $54 million of our debt securities. Share repurchases in the quarter were pretty modest, 1.5 million shares, about $38 million worth of shares. So far this year, about $165 million year to date. So given all that, our capital creation for the year has been pretty strong. I would mention that We do have the variable dividend that will be payable in late January, early February. If we were to quantify that just using through October's results, that variable dividend would be about 43 cents a share, or about 260 million, approximately those numbers. Obviously, that will change based upon the results of the next 2 months. So we have that as an upcoming activity, but currently our capital position is strong, and certainly we always want enough for operations and to grow the business. We feel comfortable with that. We always want enough for contingencies, and it looks like we have escaped an active hurricane season for this year, so we're beyond that. So it gives us more confidence in our capital position. And I think, as Glenn mentioned, you know, we continue to remain committed to what we say is that we will return under-leveraged capital, and the timing of it and the form is always under discussion to be determined. But in terms of consideration of a special dividend, yes. In terms of what we will do, more to follow.
Sure. Just as a follow-up to that, should the fact that we've not heard anything about a special dividend mean that it's, you know, less likely to happen near term?
Well, we would only announce it and talk about it after it has been considered by our Capital Investment Committee and the full board. So it's only after discussions amongst them that we'd ever comment on it or make note of it. So.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you about the timing of when or if anything would occur.
Sure. Okay. The second question is on competition. We've heard a large competitor recently announce a meaningful rate decreases on new business and the rollout of a new product. Curious as to what impact you think it's going to have on your business, and do you think that also leads to other competitors trying to reduce their cost structure and reduce their commission structure? Thanks.
I assume I know who you're referencing there, and I think that's probably way too early to totally speculate on, and I don't mean to dodge the question. Do I expect others to reduce their cost structure? I think we've been very clear, including at our IR meeting, of the importance we place on cost structure, and to us, what we believe is a fairly direct correlation between low cost and some of the results we've been able to achieve. So it won't surprise me if we see others take actions that suit their needs, whether that be commission or otherwise. And I understand relative to certain segments of the market, others will get competitive or even more competitive over time. We are always looking to do that. I think I put in my shareholders' letter that sort of product design, we don't talk about product design quite as discreetly as maybe others, because we're always doing product designs, and at any given point in time we have rollouts of different degrees of product enhancements, and we are working actively. I even gave you some indication of the things that will be in, the ones that we're working on right now. So at any given point in time, we're very dynamic. We're trying to work on rate, and if there is rate opportunities in the marketplace that others see, there's a good chance that we've seen them as well. So very hard to sort of just go, yep, one will be X result versus Y result. I think we'll be extremely competitive, and some of the books that are out there that perhaps are not as well priced are always great opportunities for us. So not a particularly insightful answer to your question, because there's really no way to give anything more color at this point in time. That may or may not be a strong player in the marketplace. I think we will continue to be a very strong player in the agency marketplace especially.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next question, Mike Nannizzi of Goldman Sachs. Your line is open. Thank you. Your line is open. Do we have Mike Nannizzi?
Hi. This is Mike Kovac on behalf of Mike Nannizzi. Through the end of the year, with more modest rate action and lapping easier comps, you guys mentioned building on increased demand, and with other direct competitors growing, some of them as high as 30%, and the uptick in loss cost trends that we saw in the third quarter relative to earlier in the year, at your current rate level, how do you guys expect to grow? Do you think it'll be more snapshot-based or something broader? And if it's broader, does that imply that your rates today are below that of some of these other growers?
Again, always hard to sort of predict exactly on one-for-one, but our demand, I think, have been pretty clear that demand has actually been picking up all year for us. So I'm focusing on the direct side here. Our advertising seems to be working. It seems to be bringing in not only good numbers but good mix of customers. What's really happened, and I highlighted this in the letter, is that that's turning into solid conversion. So on our size and the percentage that we're getting, we're actually very, very comfortable with our growth. I've said before, between GEICO and ourselves, we capture a very significant part of the new market, new business marketplace, somewhere over 50% of that. So I think that on absolute numbers, we are in a very good position to see not only the growth that we're experiencing, but the absolute numbers that are coming in. Do I expect others to compete and increase their intensity from time to time? Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks. And if I could, just a couple follow-up on Snapshot here. Many of your Snapshot customers have now gone through multiple renewals. What kind of retention data are you learning about this business? I think you've talked about a little bit about that in the past. And second, of the now over 1.2 million Snapshot customers that you have, you know, what percent of those are sort of new to Progressive, and are you finding that your rates for the non-Snapshot customers that you have today are competitive before any UBI-related discounts? Thanks.
Yeah, think of most of the customers, and I say most, there are some exceptions. Most of the customers that actually start with the Snapshot are new to Progressive because it's really offered as a new business rating enhancement. So, in fact, recently, for reasons that doesn't matter right now, I started a new policy with Progressive, and that vehicle actually was on a Snapshot basis. With regard to retention, it is absolutely true that our experience is that Snapshot customers are retaining longer than an equivalent mix of non-Snapshot customers. I'm not going to give out a lot of data points simply because clearly we know the interest in this is high and some of what we know is probably what we should know. But for those that get a substantial discount, we are seeing retention that can lift as much as 40%. And those numbers are not that shocking when you realize that you've probably taken someone to a price point in the marketplace that is simply not available at a new-for-new comparison. So once you've established yourself with the renewal, it's somewhat, I sometimes call it an absorbing state. You have a rate that truly reflects your driving behavior. No one else can know that in the marketplace on a new quote. So the retention benefit of Snapshot has been one of the number one issues that we've always been focused on. If that we could get people to a rate that was reflective of their pure premium and perhaps lower than what the market would be able to recognize without the availability of that rating variable, then there's every reason intellectually to believe that that becomes somewhat of an inert state, that why would I shift because I simply can't find that rate or better anywhere else. And that certainly is proving to be true at the overall level and even more dramatic at the higher discount level. Having said all of that, we still have very few customers who have been with us on a Snapshot basis or having had the discount with Snapshot for 5, 6, and 7 years. So we actually look forward to understanding what the long-term dynamics of those customers will be. And as we look forward, all the interim signs are very encouraging.
Great. Thanks for your answers.
Did I get all your questions on that one?
Well, so the last one was just, you know, are you finding that you're now not the non-Snapshot rate that you're offering today is competitive? So when customers are basically not opting, you know, what's it look like for you?
No, that's a good question, too. Recognize that in the marketplace, let's just keep it simple, you go shopping today, you get offered effectively the non-Snapshot rate. So you're getting offered $500 for 6 months. Let's make it simple, $100 a month, $600. Then you're getting offered the option to take Snapshot with the ability to improve your rate. And after 30 days, we give you the first recognition of that improvement and then a further recognition of the improvement after 6 months. So the actual decision you're making at the point of sale is at what you might refer to as our non-snapshot rate plus an option. So the rate at the market level is strong, and about 36%, slightly up from I think the last number I gave you, of customers who are shopping on a direct basis are actually opting to take that option, which currently is a free option. It's an option to say, I'll take the price, but I may be able to do better. As we evolve that product, we evolve all of our product designs, we will likely do things that will be different 5 years from now than what we're doing today, and probably sooner. Does that describe the dynamic of the shopping experience?
Yeah, so there's not as much, so you're not seeing really, I thought there was test drive in there a little bit too, where people could potentially get the rate before they sign up as well. So just in terms of what most of your customers are basically, you're saying, getting a rate and then using it.
Fair comment. Test drive was very much designed to do pretty much what you're describing. I would tell you, while very personally hoping test drive would be a great opportunity for us to reach out to a different set of customers and not have to have them commit, for the most part, those numbers have proven to be relatively small, and as a result, we will continue to try things, but in the spirit of Progressive, some things we try work really well, and some things don't work as well as we expected. I would tell you test drive has not produced the numbers that we might have liked. Doesn't make it bad, just makes it not something I talk about as much when we're talking about Snapshot.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, Mike Zaremski of Credit Suisse. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Crystal Liu in for Mike. I had a question about the reserve development. We understood that the reserve development was going to be adverse for the first half of the year and favorable for the last half, as management had mentioned in July. But it's running higher than we would have thought in October for the quarter. And so how should we be thinking about the reserve development going forward, given the update you gave in July?
Brett, why don't you comment on reserve development for this release and any other?
I'm not certain referencing the comments in July, but I'll try to lay a color of where our development has been so far through third quarter and then again after the October results. So at the end of the third quarter, we had approximately $80 million of unfavorable development. Call it approximately 50% in personal lines, primarily in personal auto, and then another 40% or so in the commercial lines products, and then some unfavorable development in our runoff of the professional liability group business that we sold several years back. So the $80 million was fairly comparable to what we had at the end of the first half of the year. So development in the third quarter is actually fairly modest, slightly favorable, if I remember right, just a few million favorable for the third quarter. So the third quarter activity in terms of the development pattern was better than, say, we had in the first half of the year. Then in October, we've had favorable development, much of it from actuarial reserve changes in terms of reviews that were done during the course of the month, such that now at the through October, we have roughly $40 million of unfavorable development through 10 months of the year. After the October change, personal auto is relatively flat in terms of development for the year. We still have commercial lines having some unfavorable development, primarily in our higher limits, bodily injury severities, where we've had increase in frequency and severity, particularly on the IBNR and that. We still have the runoff in the professional liability group business. That hasn't changed much. But actually, as of October now, personal auto is relatively flat in terms of development. A little bit of difference between the channels agency has had some unfavorable development, whereas direct auto has had some favorable development, and is really some of the basis for the reserve changes in the month of October.
Thanks. My other question is about the investment income. Could you give us an update on how we should be thinking about new money yields versus the portfolio yield?
Bill, why don't you take that one?
Sure. Certainly the higher rates we've seen since the springtime have helped somewhat. Our overall strategy hasn't changed, so I think if you look at the marketplace for the type of securities that we own, hopefully we'll have an opportunity to continue to add some securities at slightly better yields than they have been over the past couple of years. So no material changes, and it's just take a look at where the market is for the securities that we own or the type of securities that we have in our portfolio and project that forward.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next question, Josh Sterling of Sanford Bernstein. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Two questions, but first, obviously we'll talk about Snapshot, but I wanted to talk about your reserve development just a bit more. And, you know, from outside looking in, you're, you know, talking about sort of severity decelerating, you're seeing some favorable reserve development. I'm just trying to piece it together. It sounds like it's mostly, if I understand, at least in the personal auto side, it sounds like it's mostly coming from more favorable severity playing out than you originally assumed. I'm wondering if you can sort of, if you can clarify that, if that's right, and then if that's true, can you give us a sense of the color, a sense of, you know, what severity trend you were assuming when you booked your 12 and 13, like early 13 reserves, and sort of what the magnitude is now of sort of what experience you're actually having, and you know, so as we can sort of think about, you know, if this is an inflection, which will where we'll end up seeing favorable development play out for another number of months as we go into 14.
Sure, Josh, this is Brian. I'll provide sort of the color on the actual severities that we're seeing, and I characterize severity trends as modestly positive. So in the property damage covers, call it 2-4%, and collision more in the 4-5%. So property coverage is a little bit higher. Our bodily injury incurred severity, so this would also include reserve changes, is in the 1-2% range. And then PIP severity is actually -4%. And the PIP severity, obviously, we weren't necessarily projecting a decrease in severity in PIP. Much of that is driven by Florida, maybe some due to the new regulations, and also New York, we're seeing a decrease in severity in New York. So those two drivers drive the PIP severity, and we certainly were not necessarily in pricing or anything else pricing for a negative PIP severity. And I would also characterize our estimate of future bodily injury severity was, particularly when booking reserves and the like, was probably is greater than 1-2% that we've actually experienced so far this year. That's how I characterize it. Principally driven by a little bit lower on BI and certainly a negative severity in PIP isn't what we had anticipated. Gary, you want to add anything to that? Gary Trakoff, our actuary, is here.
Sure. I think Brian gave a good summary. This is Gary Trakoff, a corporate actuary. The favorable development for the most part has been on the case reserves, and of course that's going to be a severity driver. To Brian's point, when you look at what our severity was, say, a year ago for BI in particular, it was a little bit higher than where we're at today, looking at the 1-2% range. And we were booking a number closer to what we had seen historically relative to a year ago. So that's going to be making up a good chunk of that difference on favorable development.
And I'm sorry, this is really helpful, but you guys remind me that your statistics, your incurred severity statistics include the reserve changes. So are you seeing a similar deceleration on paids, you know, paid severity changes?
Yeah, the paid severity for BI, and think of BI being the coverage where more of the reserve changes factor in. Our paid severities are in the 3-4% range for BI year over year.
Got it. Got it. And so if I don't want to hog the call, I'll ask just one more question on Snapshot. You guys are making progress on a bunch of fronts. I'll ask about your licensing deals. It sounds like you've announced a few more, or at least willing to announce that you have succeeded a few more. I'm wondering if you can give us some color on, you know, if you can't tell us, you know, who the companies are, sort of what sort of companies are signing up with you, you know, what the, you know, what the ultimate sort of terms that are being negotiated you know, sort of are looking like, and also on the technology front, you know, if people who are signing up with you are actually going on and using and sort of executing deals with Xirgo to use the technology that you guys have pioneered with Xirgo. Thanks.
Hey, Josh, you're right. Some of the companies that we're doing business with, it's not a lot. I told you before. For right now, I guess prefer that. We don't use their name, but we did a release with USAA, so it gives you some sort of flavor. These are companies that are very credible, and when they bring their product to marketplace in 14 or 15, excuse me, or whenever, then we'll know more about it. So we've pretty much told you the terms of the licensing arrangement. We don't get into exactly what they plan to do and what they don't plan to do and other licenses that they have. So other than what I've really said, there's not much more to add there. You know, this may be just total editorial, but this is perhaps a little bit of just a personal view. When we talk about severity trends in BI, at any time they run below 5, as always has my attention. I just sort of historically, sort of that's my threshold point. And I would just say that as an industry, and certainly for Progressive, we are all looking at what might turn out to be one of the biggest exogenous changes in terms of the Accountable Care Act and how that ultimately forces price changes and so on and so forth. So just as all of us are interested in observing the industry, you and us alike, we don't necessarily know what that'll bring, but don't be surprised if severity changes are a little bit variable for the next few years as we sort of see how that settles out. And it won't surprise me at all to see things that go from relatively low to a little bit higher and back. I might be wrong on that, but something that we will have our eye on and recognize that clearly has some implications to reservings if claims that are not yet paid are influenced by that. But certainly on a going-forward basis, the incurreds could be interesting. So just keep that in mind as you observe the industry in general, that might be a significant driver that we haven't seen before.
Great. Thank you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Next question, Meyer Shields, KBW. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good morning. In the 10-Q, Glenn, you talk about, I think, a very rapid rebound on a sequential basis in new business in both agency and direct, but a slowdown in the year-over-year growth rate of renewals. And I was hoping you could explain how you interpret that.
Yeah, I think that's a fair characterization. I think I would be awkward if it was the next quarter, the first quarter of next year when we have this call, if I can't sort of report that the renewals are now showing the sort of same trend. Now, I'm not necessarily suggesting double digits, but as we start to see our primary measure, a measure that we have as a primary measure. We have lots of subsequent supporting measures. Our policy life expectancy is a lag measure, so it just takes a while for that one to turn. Clearly, we look at other measures that are a little bit more of an acceleration vector. So right now, I feel much more confident in what I can see and report as absolute hard data, which is what I did with regard to the new business, and then gave both a very clear indication. So think for gross purposes, 20% business is new, 80% is renewal. So this really needs to flow through to renewal. There is no logical reason why it won't, but I like to see that before starting to report on it. My commentary was this is where it must come to roost, and we are starting to see the signs that would make that a true statement. I would tell you, and I can't necessarily explain it with perfect detail, that it's just a little slower than I would have projected. But we're starting to see our renewal rates now head in the right direction. And the other measure that we use somewhat as an earlier proxy are our NPS measures, and those of recent times have started to head up in both channels. So fourth quarter, if as expected, that flows through to renewals, then we'll be in very good shape.
The other thing I'd add to that is in terms of, say, absolute renewal application counts, they're somewhat a function of the policies in force, call it 6 months earlier, right? So 6 month policy term. And so if you were to look particularly, say, at agency where our policies in force 6 months ago were close to zero or slightly negative, then how many renewal apps you're going to have on a year-over-year basis is somewhat a function of that, pending changes in retention rates and renewal rates. So as our policy in force growth year-over-year was declining, more so in agency but also in direct, the absolute growth rates in renewal apps just follows that. Now, as we are starting to see some sequential increases in policy force growth year over year, that's when we anticipate that 6 months further down the road, we'll start seeing renewal app growth higher. And you'll see it since our direct policy in force growth rate is now over 4%, you should see it in the renewal application absolute counts growth rates in direct more than you will in the agency.
Okay, no, that helps. The modest decline in PLE in agency, is that a function of more new business or the type of new business?
It's not really a function of the new business. I think for the most part, the decrease in PLE that we have experienced throughout this year is really a function of the rate changes we had made towards the end of last year, which adversely affected retention rates. So that has been what the driver of the decrease in PLE is, and I think Glenn mentioned in his answer to a previous question, in terms of the calculations of the PLE, some of it can be a lag measure, and what we are focusing in more and more on our current renewal rates, which are we're starting to see increase on a year-over-year basis. But I would say most of the PLE decrease that we experience and comment on is more a function of the rate change as opposed to a mix change.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Just as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you may press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Next question is Greg Locraft of Morgan Stanley. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi, thanks. Wanted to just understand a bit more, new applications picking up. Any intelligence as to where they're coming from? Why are folks engaging with you more, today versus before, and who's losing market share is what I'm trying to figure out.
Two thoughts there. One would be an idea that I tried to express in the letter, that our rate, when we take it, we're always taking estimates of future rate, and it turns out that perhaps our loss cost did not go up as fast as we had expected, which makes the competitive point of a rate revision. So think of a rate revision lasting just artificially, let's just say, a year. It's a little less competitive right after you've taken rate, and somewhat more competitive at the expiry point of the rate revision. Well, the most competitive point is somewhere in the middle. That's a little hypothetical. Lots of things change around that. But we're now approaching sort of what I'll call that more competitive position. So our conversion rate, the demand has actually been very strong. What we're seeing is as we move through the life of a rate revision, and recognize we're talking here about many hundreds of rate revisions, not one, so it's hard to characterize, but we'll keep it simple, that we're in more of the sweet spot of the rate revision. A second reason that we're getting it is, I also referenced in the letter, we have not done this in wholesale, but in some cases where those estimates were off sufficiently, then the product manager has actually taken actions to adjust, and Florida is an important state for us. It's our largest state, and we've actually taken rate adjustments in Florida that have all turned out, as far as we can see right now, to be exactly the right type of adjustments. And those have resulted in a good new business flow for us in the state of Florida, which is an important one. So both the overall competitiveness in most states and a little bit more direct action in some states.
The other point I'd make is in the direct channel. In the first half of the year, our advertising spend was basically on par with the first half of 2012. But on a year-over-year basis, our advertising spend in the third quarter and continuing the fourth quarter is very much greater than what it was in the last half of last year. Because last year, given some of the profit concerns, we actually reduced some of our advertising spend from anticipated levels. Now, given the demand that we're seeing, the conversion, and the yield, our advertising spend is significantly higher than a year ago, which is aiding the quoting activity and demand in the direct channel. As to where it's coming from, we actually do have the data in terms of who the prior carriers are. I don't have it here with me, but we can follow up on that one for you.
And maybe okay.
Maybe talk about it at the next conference call.
Okay. Great. And then just an entirely separate topic and admittedly incredibly far out, but our auto team here has done a lot of work on the driverless car, the autonomous car. 10 years out is what they say. The technology is there, but adoption is the concern. You guys are I think, you know, the leaders of in the industry on the technology side. Any thoughts around you know, that world, what it looks like, what it means for Progressive, where we're at, et cetera?
A lot of thoughts, and it's sort of irresponsible not to have thoughts. Unfortunately, sometimes thoughts and knowledge are different. So we covered a fair amount of that in the IR meeting, but primarily to try to give some sense of, essentially it sounds like similar to what you're doing, where the technology actually exists and then ultimately how it gets into the fleet. There is another level of thinking going on that suggests, and I'm not going to go into it in great detail, what might be insurable interests going forward in a different world. All of us are very familiar with many other industries, whether it be film and digital photography. Fact is, the world takes a lot more photographs today than they ever did. Just had to, yet to figure out what was important in that transition. So we're always looking to see what's important. I would tell you that purely on a personal basis, I am very excited not just about Snapshot for what it is and what we all have some knowledge of, but it gives us some very direct insight to the vehicle. In gross terms, if today the driver is the biggest single issue of quality defects in driving, accidents happen as quality defects, the driver is largely responsible for those. Knowing what's going on in the vehicle is an important aspect, and our telemetry and knowing that gives us opportunities to think about things differently, what might be insurable interest. There'll be a lot of technology in the car. Some of it will be a plug-compatible replacement. Some will have dual or fault-tolerant dual processing and so on and so forth. There's all sorts of things in there that might come about that represent insurable opportunities going forward. Those are appropriately somewhat blue sky, but as that sky gets clearer and clearer, I'm not sure that I think it'll be exactly with anybody else's estimated time frame, but we're not in the business of necessarily worrying about whether we hit that on the nail or not. We'll just continue to refine estimates over time, but along with those estimates, we'll also be starting to ask, what does an insurer look like in the future? And I suspect that's a lot more to do with information that comes from the car than the classical segmentation with regard to characteristics of the driver.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, Ian Gutterman of BAM. Your line is open.
Hi, I wanted to follow up again on PLE. I guess, Glenn, where I'm a little confused with PLE being down so much this year is, as I thought, Snapshot, as you mentioned, is supposed to help PLE, and if Snapshot's becoming such a big part of the mix, I mean, if we're, it looks like we're into the double digits overall on direct, maybe it's as much as 20, I'm guessing, you know, why hasn't that been more of an offset to the PLE pressure from pricing?
It's certainly in the mix. I don't have that broken out. I'm not trying to avoid the question, just don't have it broken out that way. I'd also tell you that Snapshot customers are primarily sort of, or at least have historically been more new customers, so there is, to the extent that we ever experience a significant lengthening of PLE, Our measures will ultimately have to experience that before we sort of incorporate it in. So to a prior question, I said we really don't have a lot of 5- and 6-year customers. It may be that we are under, it may be, I want to stress those words, that we're underestimating PLE on snapshot customers. Anytime you take on a very different mix, i.e. a customer who has a discount that wasn't previously available to them, we will only be able to experience what we experience. We won't know necessarily what the long-term state of that is. So I hear your question, I understand, and it is affecting PLE, but the effect is probably not as great as you think right now. Will it get greater over time? We may consider breaking that out a little bit, but I will tell you that it's a, certainly an encouraging vector for the change of PLE over time. The other thing with PLEs is recognize the ones that we talk about are not necessarily mix-adjusted, so we could talk about the PLE for certain classes of customers. We're not going to do that, but it really does require a little bit more of a diagnostic into the PLE to see what type of customers we're getting. Obviously, our non-standard customers are not producing a lot of extension of PLE, but we're very happy to have them as long as they're paying their full freight in terms of loss costs. Other types of customers, our multi-product customers, those that are getting a homeowner or those that are getting a snapshot, are absolutely showing the change dimension that we think we can incorporate into our overall PLE. And having said all of that, we are perfectly happy to have some short-term PLE customers as long as they are ultimately profitable customers for us. So it would be a little bit more of a, maybe we'll do it at a future IR meeting, but we really need to break the PLE down to considerably smaller segments to be able to see the change. In the macro, you may not see the change as readily.
Okay, I understood. Let me just ask one clarification on that. Would it be fair to say Snapshot has benefited PLE more than it's benefited your actual retention? Because I guess that maybe I'm being simplistic about it, but I thought PLE was policy life expectancy, so you can incorporate expected benefits versus retention, which is more of an actual. So why wouldn't, if you expect those people to stay for 5 or 6 years because of Snapshot, why wouldn't that be in the expectancy of the PLE?
Expectancy is an estimate based on renewal events. So we just don't make a priori estimate. It is based on the observable events of renewal at a 7-6 renewal. Are they here at the 7th month after the 6th month? So we didn't go in with an artificial or we think these customers will last X long and therefore price them to that. We are actually doing it on loss cost improvements on Snapshot, not necessarily PLE. As the PLE is measurable, we will incorporate that in.
Okay, now I think I follow. Got it. And then my other question, if I could, is I was just curious what initiatives you're working on for, it seems there's a arguably permanent change in how younger drivers think about cars and more of, the ride sharing and, some of these other services which lead to sort of new insurance challenges. Are you working on sort of new products for that type of young consumer that look different than traditional insurance? Are those on the market yet? Are they still on pilot? Just curious how you're thinking about that issue.
Well, nothing that is overly specific to those characteristics. Again, at our most recent IR meeting, we talked a little bit about the different characteristics of those younger drivers. You're correct. They're getting licensed later in life, so on and so forth, which actually has some benefits from a loss cost perspective. We're very, very focused on understanding millennials and what their characteristics might be and the media that they are responding to. So, yes, it sort of permeates our thinking, but there's no specific product that we're planning to come out with at this point in time that is focused on that group specifically.
Got it. Thank you.
There don't seem to be any additional questions at this time. Candy, we'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you. That concludes the Progressive Corporation's Investor Relations Conference call. An instant replay of the call will be available through Friday, November 29th by calling 1-800-945-6737 or can be accessed via the Investor Relations section of Progressive's website for the next year. Thank you.